WGN.
Time to talk social media. We've talked about Pinterest and how popular it became during the pandemic, and now to talk about an interesting trend, digital strategist Scott Kleinberg. Good morning, Scott. Tell us what's happening here.
Morning, Bob. Sure. So, well, Pinterest, they had their earnings call for investors last week, and usually that's not the kind of news that you and I would talk about, but during the call, Pinterest announced it shed 24 million users over the past 3 months. And it says the reason for that is largely because the vaccine rollout led to the reopening of physical stores, and that played a role in online browsing and buying. And to me, the big story there is how much Pinterest was helping to take the pulse of people as they navigated the pandemic.
They lost 24 million users?
Yep.
Wow.
24 million users.
Wow. Now, we've talked about how well searches on Pinterest equated with what was happening at the time, right?
Right, exactly. Things like, remember, sourdough bread baking and dream vacations and arts and crafts. People would search for a trend, and, you know, the reports would show, you know, people's state of mind. Now we're talking about 24 million fewer users, and the reason why. Stores are reopening, people are getting away from their computers, and they're venturing back out.
So are you thinking Pinterest could still serve as that roadmap to keep track of progress, especially now that restrictions are coming back with the Delta variant?
Yeah, Bob, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I mean, based on following Pinterest as closely as I have over the past year and a half, I absolutely think that that interest in searches for things like homemade jigsaw puzzles could very well forecast people's state of mind. Now, that's just my example, but that would tell me that people are planning on a long winter and preparing ideas now.
And some would say fewer people online is a good sign, that going back out is what's needed to jumpstart the economy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and think about this. You know, Pinterest can't be happy about user numbers going down, but I think it fits exactly with what we're talking about. People turn to Pinterest for ideas when they couldn't go out. Now they can. They're not turning to Pinterest as much. And I think as the bar changes, depending on the day-to-day, that Pinterest will continue to be a good indicator of what's to come.
Maybe I'll start using it. I've never really understood it or gotten on Pinterest. But as a whole, as one of the major social media networks, it is still healthy and doing well, isn't it?
Oh, I'd say so. You know, in that earnings call, they announced it had about 454 million users. Now, that's not Facebook's billions of users, but that's okay. And remember, right prior to right now, this part's really interesting. Pinterest recorded 11 consecutive quarters of growth. 11. So that's pretty phenomenal. And I want to call one thing out, Bob. You just used the word healthy when you were talking about your last question. I think Pinterest is not just financially healthy. I'm not a psychologist, but to me, it feels mentally healthy. And the reason I say that is because when I do my daily checks on all the other platforms, it gets overwhelming. I mean, there's misinformation, there's divisiveness, there's politics. And, you know, you can only take so much when you're looking at that all the time. Pinterest, you know, it always feels hopeful and helpful. It's one of those places where I can spend extended periods of time and I can get ideas for arts and crafts and recipes and dream vacations all within the span of a few minutes and not feel like it's a chore.
Right, and not get aggravated. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Talking social media with Scott Kleinberg, as we do in this time period every Tuesday. Scott, you mentioned misinformation a few minutes ago, and it's hard to not mention it in today's social media landscape. And you have some things to keep in mind when posting related to misinformation, right?
I do, Bob. Yeah. You know that I often talk about that shared responsibility of curbing misinformation by doing things like reporting dangerous posts. I notice that people are often hesitant to share the right kinds of things because of the reaction that they get. So now there are more ways than ever that you can limit your audience on your post to keep the conversation from getting out of control.
But if you limit the audience, then you're limiting the reach of your message, aren't you?
Well, good question, and actually yes and no. If you're on Twitter and you decide to only allow the people you follow to reply to a tweet because you know them to be more accepting of what you share, to me, that's actually better than allowing everyone to reply, because anyone can include a bot or someone set on spreading misinformation. There could be someone in your subset who would do the same thing, and you can unfollow that person, but this gives you a little bit more control.
So sticking with your Twitter example, anyone can limit the replies?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that's super easy, Bob. Now every tweet has a thing at the bottom called Who Can Reply, and it's a menu, and it has three choices. There's everyone, there's only people you follow, and there's only people you mention. You have to select one before you tweet, but it automatically defaults to everyone. So if you don't touch it, it's on everyone, but then you can move it around.
Hmm. This doesn't stop someone from sharing the tweet, does it?
No, not at all. This is just for replies, so it's limited in scope. But sometimes people respond to things, and things get quickly out of control, and this helps you keep things in order. And here's a bonus tip. That last choice to only allow replies from people you mention, if you don't mention anyone in the tweet and you choose this setting, it means no one can reply. And that actually goes against my usual definition of social media, because I always say it's made for engaging and not for broadcasting. But if everyone once in a while you need to say something without inviting a conversation around it, this would be one way to do it.
And Twitter isn't the only place you can limit an audience, right?
Oh, right. Actually, Twitter has other ways to limit. This just happens to be for replies. Facebook and Instagram, for example, they allow you to completely segment your audiences when you share. So there's all kinds of control that exist across the board.
Good to know. All right, now for the Genius Bar question this week, let's talk about the settings on your phone and when you should turn the wireless off and when you should leave it on. I used to always just have it on in my settings, and then Marianne told me when I was having trouble, what was I doing? I was like Googling something and not connecting to the internet or something, and I was out somewhere, and she said, "Well, we'll turn the wireless off because it'll be more efficient that way, more effective that way." So, does that depend on what your plan is with your phone?
It's a good point. Marianne has it 95% right. It depends on where you are. If you're at home and you are connected to a Wi-Fi network or at work, keep it on. There's no reason to turn it off. But if you're out and about somewhere, it is possible that what's happening is your phone is trying to connect to a previous network or some other network that it doesn't have rights to connect to, like a coffee shop, like a free Wi-Fi or something like that. So that if that's happening at the same time you're trying to surf the web, you might find that your phone is sluggish or not working at all. So then if you turn off your Wi-Fi, you can use your cellular minutes, and that would work better. So to me, the answer is only if you're out and about somewhere where you're not sure what your phone is connecting to, then you should turn off Wi-Fi. But otherwise, I always leave it on.
All right. I've learned something today. Thank you, Scott Kleinberg, and we'll talk to you again next week. Have a good one.
You too, Bob. Thank you.